The next case is 99-613-99-769, State of Ohio versus Keenan Jones.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Mr. Press better with this one.
Good morning, may I please the court. Again today on behalf of the State of Ohio to ask that this court reverse the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals to remand this case for trial on merits. We'd also like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The principal question that is presently before this court for review is whether a person can commit a minor misdemeanor in the presence of a police officer has a constitutional right not to be arrested. Now, the Court of Appeals concluded that yes, a person who commits a minor misdemeanor, even though an officer sees them commit this misdemeanor, does have a constitutional right not to be arrested. And they came to this conclusion based primarily upon state law, namely Revised Code Section 2935.26A, which provides that while an officer may otherwise have a legitimate right to make an arrest, that officer should not make an arrest if the offense is a minor misdemeanor, absent certain enumerated exceptions.
Which one of those enumerated exceptions applies in that case?
The state concedes the fact that none of the exceptions enumerated in the statute apply. We freely and openly concede that this statute was violent. There was no...
Then where is the authority to arrest?
The authority to arrest lies under constitutional law, in that the decisions of this court and the United States Supreme Court have held that the constitutional validity of an arrest depends upon whether, at the time the arrest was made, the officer had probable cause to make it. Meaning that the test for determining probable cause for arrest without a warrant is whether the facts and circumstances within the officer's knowledge were sufficient to warrant a prudent man in believing that the defendant had committed or was committing offense. Simply stated, the decisions of this court and the United States Supreme Court consistently provide that if an officer has probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed and probable cause to believe that this suspect has committed it, they have a constitutional right, counsel, to effect it. All of those
constitutional arguments. Is there any single case in which the arrest was effectuated?
I don't believe that any of the constitutional cases dealing with power to arrest ever addressed the question of whether that arrest was necessarily in violation of the state law.
They didn't start out with an arrest that violated the state statute.
That's correct.
So in reality, you are asking us to stretch here, aren't you?
Well, I'm asking you to consider constitutional law and the authority to arrest that has been established by the courts under constitutional law.
In fact, you're asking us to declare the statute unconstitutional.
Not to declare the statute unconstitutional, but to declare this arrest merely violated a state law rather than violated the Constitution of this state or the Fourth Amendment. And in effect, being a state law violation and not a constitutional violation, I find that the exclusionary rule should not be applied in suppressing the evidence that was seized during this arrest.
Is the problem here that there, I mean, when you have probable cause to arrest, that the Constitution says that warrantless arrest is okay? I mean, under constitutional law, we say, well, probable cause makes it okay to arrest. But this is jaywalking, and it seemed that the Court of Appeal said, we know Kettering v. Holland is out there, and it says, you know, that just the violation of state law won't trigger the exclusionary rule. That's Kettering v. Holland. In this case, but it seemed that the Court of Appeal said, what we have is both a violation of state law, Kettering v. Holland, but we also have a violation of Fourth Amendment. And when you have that, then the whole Kettering v. Holland issue is put aside because you have an overlay. In Kettering v. Holland, we know that the officer was making a traffic stop outside the jurisdiction, and that was the violation of state law, that he really didn't have jurisdiction in that next city, county, whatever. So, is the court? What's wrong with that? With that premise from the Court of Appeals here that says, despite we know that there was this violation of state law, but we think, nevertheless, the exclusionary rule isn't triggered for this warrantless arrest.
The conclusion that the Court of Appeals came to, essentially, was that this was a constitutional violation because it was a violation of the statute. They essentially tied the two together and concluded that the Constitution was violated merely because the statute existed.
Mm-hmm.
Did not analyze the reasonableness of this arrest from an independent basis absent the statute. And in fact, this court in State v. Slatter did address for the first time the extent to which 2935-26 gives an individual the right to not arrest for commission of a minor misdemeanor. And it concluded that the enactment of 2935-26 created a substantive right of freedom from arrest for an accused of the commission of a minor misdemeanor unless one of the enumerated exceptions apply. But acknowledged further that right is merely created, defined, and regulated solely by the statute. So that would make the question then that if the right to not arrest is strictly defined by the statute, if we were to repeal the statute, would the right to not arrest not exist? Meaning, do we have a constitutional right merely because the statute exists? Take away the statute, where does that right go? Under Slatter, it would seem to indicate that there would be no right to not arrest. Therefore, how can this be a constitutional right if it's merely defined by the provisions enumerated in the statute? Furthermore, in Slatter, this court held that 2935-26A acts to preclude arrest and is a guarantee of personal freedom given by the legislature where no such right existed before. Again, that seems to suggest that prior to 1978, when this statute was enacted, there was no right to not arrest for minor misdemeanor. Because the Fourth Amendment has existed since the late 1700s, and Article 1, Section 14 has existed since the mid-1800s, it would seem to suggest that there is no constitutional right not to be arrested for minor misdemeanor, and that right was purely created, defined, and regulated by this statute, making it then a statutory right to not arrest, but not a constitutional right. The secondary argument then that I would like to address, and Justice Cook touched upon that, is the law outlined by Kevin B. Collins, which held that the exclusionary rule will not ordinarily be applied to evidence which is the product of police misconduct violative of state law, but not violative of constitutional law. Meaning that if this court were to find that the right to not arrest exists merely by statute and is not a constitutional right, the Court of Appeals implicate use of the exclusionary rule was not in line with this court's prior holdings in Holland, in Hiller v. Elfnick, where this court again found that the exclusionary rule is invoked only when a violation of constitutional rights are involved. And the same again in State v. Drugs.
For lack of a better way to say it, I've been trying to think how to pose it, but for lack of a better way, why should we reward the police for violating the law?
Well, Your Honor, whether or not there should be a punishment or a sanction for violation of this statute is a decision that should be left up to the Ohio General Assembly. This court in State v. Myers held that that the policy enunciated in that case that the exclusionary rule should not be applied to statutory violations or, in short, of constitutional violations absent a legislative mandate requiring the application of that rule.
I understand all those interlocking things. The simple fact is here, the General Assembly has said, you don't arrest unless this exists. He arrested. He violated the statute. Why should we reward the police for violating the law?
I don't believe the police should necessarily be rewarded. However, absent a constitutional violation, exclusion of the evidence seized in the search incident to that arrest would not be justified merely for violation of the statutory law. If a punishment should be meted out for this violation, it should be a punishment that the General Assembly approves and enacts rather than implication of the exclusionary rule. In conclusion, then, the state is willing to concede that when the police did arrest Keenan Jones, they did so in violation of state law that prohibited arrest for minor misdemeanors except in limited circumstances. However, while statutorily invalid, the arrest of Keenan Jones was nevertheless constitutionally reasonable because it was made on the basis of probable cause to believe that a crime had been committed and that Keenan Jones was the offender. Therefore, since the arrest of Keenan Jones did not offend the Constitution, application of the exclusionary rule in this case should not apply.
Well, what your argument really is that the evidence should not be excluded since there simply was a statutory violation and not a constitutional violation. Isn't that what you're saying?
That is correct.
And the exclusionary rule should not apply to statutory violations. It should be rule for constitutional violations.
That is correct.
Now, what should that tell you? Did this officer arrest Keenan Jones because he crossed the street illegally?
He arrested Keenan Jones because, under the policy of the Dayton Police Department, anyone who cannot produce written photo identification is subject to arrest. The Dayton Police Department, to be honest, uses this rule as a way to attempt to clean up the streets, to remove potential drug dealers, to remove potential prostitutes from the street, temporarily, knowing full well that they cannot continue to detain these people, and it's merely a method of getting them off the street temporarily, having them pay the fine personally, and then they are re-released. It is a temporary fix to an ongoing problem that the police department has chosen to deal with in this manner.
So when we go to Dayton, we better be sure to make sure we remember to have our driver's license, because we could be put in jail temporarily because we don't have a photo with us.
Well,
better carry one in the glove compartment of our car or someplace. This has been a useful argument.
Well, I think it may not appear to be the best way of dealing with this situation, but it is nonetheless constitutionally valid, given the law that has been set forth by this court and the United States Supreme Court.
We have a case in all fours on that issue. We have a case in all fours on that issue.
No violation of the statute.
He said it seems to be valid practice by the police to do this because of the case that we've decided.
Have to have a photo identification.
You have a case on that. Just generally.
The general law that has been set forth, that probable cause is all that is needed to arrest. And admittedly, this was a minor misdemeanor, this was a petty offense, but it was an offense nonetheless. And constitutionally, then...
I was referring to the requirement that one have a photo on their person when they're in Dayton, I suppose in certain areas, but... Go ahead. I didn't think we decided that.
There's no case that I'm aware of that would require people to carry identification. For these reasons, I would ask that this court reverse the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals and remand this case to the trial court for trial on the merits.
Thank you, Mr. French. Mr. Miller.
That police officers can arbitrarily, intentionally, and illegally arrest people, take them into custody, search their person, search their belongings. That person found violating the most minor of offenses and not even entail jail, incarceration, if found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And that any evidence seized as a result of these police actions is not subject to the exclusionary rule. The state of Ohio position failed to recognize the constitutional nature and foundation of Revised Code 2935.26. This court should hold that a minor misdemeanor arrest made in violation of 2913.26 constitute, in addition to an illegal arrest, a statutory violation of arrest, an unreasonable search and seizure under the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
What makes it unreasonable? The state law?
There is no state.
Yeah.
State law, the statute.
Right. That says thou shalt not arrest for a minor misdemeanor.
The argument that we make is that statute sets the parameters of what is reasonable
for reasonableness
under of the U.S. Constitution and the Ohio Constitution. It sets the parameters of what is reasonable. And
To say that sets the parameters for reasonable, I'm not sure how you get there. Because, I mean, take our other case, the Kettering v. Holland, where we have said that arresting outside the jurisdiction doesn't trigger Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule protection. So, you know, for my purposes, I guess we have to distinguish this case from that, from the reasoning. The reasoning behind that is a violation of state law. Is it the type of statute? Is that what we should go to? Territorial limits doesn't seem like it has any Fourth Amendment kind of implications. It's a gotcha, you know, by the way, you were outside your jurisdiction, officer, so it didn't work. Here, is that what you want us to say here, where we've defined what offenses are arrestable? Is it something?
That's what we are arguing, is that statute sets the foundation different than cases where we generally find that there's a violation of state statute, the laundry list of Kerry versus Holland. It doesn't go to the substance of whether there's probable cause to arrest at all. And Holland,
do we have anything to support that argument that is the purpose of that, of the statute, that minor misdemeanors are not arrestable offenses? I don't know where we'd find that. Is that just, that's intuitive? I mean,
I would say it's intuitive, but I don't think we have any legislative intent that that's the purpose of that.
Because it could be, we don't, you know, it could be some kind of economies, you know, we don't want officers spending their time, or we don't want those folks in jail, or it could be something other than the Fourth Amendment that spurs that.
It seems that if we look in terms of the Constitution, in terms of the founding fathers, whether there was a reasonable reason to free from arbitrary arrest for minor offenses, traditionally the police had the authority to arrest for felonies and without probable cause and then misdemeanor in their presence. There seems to be generally, and I can't point you to anything specifically because the cases seem to talk around about the power to arrest for sounded on
because the other thing you go to is probable cause to arrest under the Fourth Amendment cases, warrantless searches or, you know, a warrantless seizure is okay where there's probable cause and offense to know that offense has been committed. And is there any basis for saying an arrestable offense has been committed? Because that's kind of what we're saying.
The state generally has argued generally that the proposition that you have to have probable cause to arrest, probable cause that an offense has been committed, in all the cases, though, that they cite, in most of the cases that are cited, the issue of whether the authority to actually arrest, whether this was an arrestable offense, was not really an issue. You have a murder charge, probable cause for felonies or misdemeanors. There never really was an issue whether they had the authority. Now, in the Court of Appeals decision, State versus Timpson, this court, in talking about a bench warrant that was issued by a federal judge, and in that particular case, it appears that there was probable cause that a bench warrant had been issued, that there was, but the issue was that the arresting officer didn't have the authority to make the arrest because it wasn't a felony based on probable cause, and it wasn't a misdemeanor in his presence, and therefore the exclusion was applied to exclude their recovery of a gun. Yeah, I think that might be a little bit of a stretch in terms of reading that case, but if you really read under that case...
Timpson. This is Timpson.
State versus Timpson, 38 Ohio State, 2nd, 122. Essentially, what the argument that we make is that in addition to having probable cause that an offense has been committed, you have to have probable cause that it's an arrestable offense. And a violation of the Revised Code 2935.26 makes, even though you have probable cause for a minor misdemeanor, it doesn't give you probable cause to arrest.
Would it make any difference if your client ran when he saw the police?
If you ran when you saw the police, then the issue would be whether there was another charge, absent a minor misdemeanor, that could be.
Well, what did the Supreme Court of the United States say on that?
Whether you run, the most recent case, and I can't cite you, it appears that running is a factor.
5-4, they said it was all right, didn't they?
Before that, they said, you could run, and it wasn't a factor. I think it's more in the context of the Terry stop and seizure as opposed to an arrest. If he ran...
Would it give the police more probable cause if he had run when he saw them?
If he had run?
Yeah.
It might have given him no more probable cause that the jaywalking that was what he was being stopped for. That would have affected the jaywalking. What it might have affected was one of the factors being proper identification. He's running...
Had he run when he saw the police, would that give the police a probable cause to pat him down to see if he was armed?
The fact that you're running might be a factor to consider, but in and of itself, I don't believe that just running would be a factor. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances in the context of running from the police from the jaywalking. I'm not sure that would constitute reasonable suspicion that the person...
It would give the police more than they have here.
Right, that's correct. And the issue really is, Your Honor, that the police stop. They can stop Mr. Jones for jaywalking. They can issue a citation. If they have reasonable suspicion that he's armed and dangerous, they can even do a pat down, a carry type pat down. What they can't do is just arbitrarily. And I think that the state is correct in dating, at least this particular officer feels that you have to carry identification with you or else you get arrested. And the logical conclusion is just like Your Honor said, is that you better have your identification. If you fail to use your turn signal and get stopped for the turn signal over your arrest, you don't have your identification with you.
Well, it sounds like that if the police determine that the they see someone that really doesn't belong in the neighborhood, that they can stop them and ask ID and everything else.
Absolutely. If you ask me, my gut on this, just as asked the prosecutor, my gut is that this is just a pretext. These are all pretext cases. They use the jaywalking as a pretext to stop and search. They're not, they could care less about the jaywalking. The jaywalking is a safety feature for the individual doing the jaywalking. They don't care for safety. What they want to do, in this case, they did just that, is to stop, arrest, search. They want to find out what's in these people's pockets, simply for dope. If they don't find it, obviously, maybe the person gets relieved. Maybe he just gets brought down a minor misdemeanor and has to spend the night in jail for something he couldn't be sentenced to anyway. It's sort of that argument sort of dovetails into the second part. In addition, is the reasonableness standard under the Fourth Amendment in the Ohio Constitution?
Now, let me stop you there. Neither of you have briefed this. I don't think I saw it briefed. Doesn't this case require us to decide the extent to which common law, judge-written law, which sets a standard for constitutional conduct, does this case require us to explore what the authority of a legislature is to change that judge-written law, common law? I mean, here we have a definition of arrest that's certainly broad enough to include the conduct here. Would you agree with that? If we accept the general test for when a police officer may arrest someone, it's general enough that here your client could have been arrested without the statute. Now we have a statute that intends to change that guideline, if you will, or that rule of law. What's the authority? There's a lot written on this, but there's none within your brief. I'm just curious. Is that an issue we should be looking at?
I think that if I understand your question, I think the issue is more, not so much whether this is a derogation from the common law, whether this is more of a codification of the common law. And I think there is something to look to the intent of the common law, of what the rights were of individuals. But in the context of today's society, where the regulations, safety regulations, and the whole concept of minor misdemeanors has been developed within the last 30 years to the extent that we make a distinction now between the most minor offenses that can't be jailed, misdemeanors, and felonies. Traditionally, we had a distinction between misdemeanors and felonies, and maybe that. But this particular statute, I'm not sure that going back in time and looking at common law, whether this is a derogation from common law, that it's appropriate. And except that I believe that if you did that, that this would then be the argument that I would make, is that this debt essentially codifies our expectation of privacy to be free from arrest, unreasonable arrest for minor offenses.
So your argument seems to be that the court-written tests on this issue were announced before we had minor misdemeanors. I don't know if that's true or not. But
and I have to admit that I tried to determine when minor misdemeanors came into existence in our law, in statutory or common law, and the distinction. I think it's a recent phenomenon that we have set this distinction between minor misdemeanors, and felonies, and so that a lot of the interpretation would be a recent Johnson, where there was an entry into the house for non-jailable traffic. Well, what's the probable cause that this person committed essentially what would be called a DUI, but the court limited whether they could enter into the house to actually secure evidence and to secure the individual, based upon the reasonable potential. There was probable cause they committed an offense, but it wasn't reasonable to have them enter the house. Also, under Wyoming, under Wilson versus Arkansas, we talked about the Knock rule in terms of search warrants. There's probable cause, but part of that is the reasonableness of how you enter. So there is a reasonableness standard in the Fourth Amendment and the Ohio Constitution. And this statute sets that reasonableness standard for search and seizure under both statutes. Your Honor, in closing, I believe this court should affirm the Second District Court of Appeals decision. To not affirm this decision will essentially leave police conduct, unbridled police conduct to search, to arrest and search at will. With the erosion recently, Wren versus the United States, where there's no such thing as pretext as long as the police can articulate any minor offense, to not to apply the exclusionary rule in these particular situations would essentially let police misconduct lead to violation of constitutional rights and statutory rights go unbridled. And I don't believe that that is what the nature of the Fourth Amendment and the United States Constitution serves as seizure rights. I think that's what we're meant to protect. And I ask you to affirm from court and the court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. French, you've saved almost 2 minutes of your time.
Keenan Jones was not arrested because the police wanted to harass him. He was not arrested because the police thought he was up to no good and they wanted to shake him down to see if he had any drugs or weapons. Keenan Jones was arrested because he broke the law. Plain and simple. Keenan Jones and anyone else can walk around all day long with crack, guns, whatever in their pockets without any fear of arrest, provided they do not break the law. The police must act reasonably. That is what the Fourth Amendment requires. And in this case, the police...
You can walk around with guns and crack in his pockets and he's not subject to arrest, provided they don't break the law.
Provided you do not break the law. If Keenan Jones...
Those are violations of the law.
Well, unless the police see an offense which creates probable cause for them to arrest. I can walk around with crack cocaine in my pocket as long as the police don't know it's there and I don't break any other laws. The police have no right to stop me without probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed. In this case, Keenan Jones committed a minor misdemeanor. It was a petty offense, but it was an offense nonetheless. And that is the reason why he was stopped and arrested. And the police acted reasonably when they effected this arrest.
They acted reasonably under your argument of the constitutional law, but they didn't go through the law itself.
The only reason this arrest is unlawful is because, the only reason this arrest is unlawful is because the Ohio General Assembly has passed a statute declaring it unlawful. But the Ohio General Assembly is not in a position to create constitutional rights. That is not their authority. This statute cannot be designated as a constitutional right, thereby giving the legislature power to create and potentially take away constitutional rights merely by passing and repealing laws. All that the Fourth Amendment requires is that police act reasonably and act upon probable cause, and that is what the police did in this case.
So, lights on the bed. I guess we're dealing say they didn't arrest them for that reason. They certainly stopped them for a different reason.
They stopped him because the police witnessed him committing a violation of a Dayton City ordinance.
But in your own statement of fact, you say that approximately 525 officers were dispatched to the intersection of Walton and Dallas. Dispatch provided the officers with physical description to the unidentified criminals. We could be selling drugs at that location. That's your statement of fact.
Yes.
So that's really why they stopped.
That is why they were dispatched to that location and attempted to approach him. He was stopped and arrested because he was jaywalking. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, French. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.